I believe it was probably the summer of 2005. And that perfect time of day, maybe just an hour before dusk, warm but not hot, teetering almost toward cool but still warm, my oldest daughter Kaylee and I are playing in the street, Ridges Court in the South End here in Portsmouth. She's 4 or 5. And I hear the faint sound of music off in the distance. I recognize immediately what it is. Did you hear that, Kaylee? What? Stop. Shh. Listen. We stand still with our heads down. I'd like to imagine our eyes are closed when you're trying to hear something you can't see. The music comes again, faint but clear. Kaylee hears it this time. What is it? Let's listen again and see if we can tell if it's getting closer. Her curiosity goes from intrigued to elevated. It'll peak off the charts in just a moment. We hear it again, and it has gotten louder. I tell her that louder means it is going in the right direction, toward us, not away from us. What is it? What is it? What is it? Two thoughts cross my mind. First, fatherhood is filled with millions of just unbelievably beautiful little moments. Second, it occurs to me that human beings are apparently not born with an innate genetically programmed understanding of something known as the ice cream truck. I am standing with a little girl that is about to experience one of the happiest moments of her life. Kaylee, looking right into her eyes, it is the ice cream truck. The what? She is beside herself. Thrilled, confused, almost panicked, trying to process what this means. What is an ice cream truck? I explain, it is a truck filled with ice cream. And the ice cream person, though it seems that they are all guys, drives it around selling ice cream to anyone who would like some. I check my pockets, no wallet, no money. I look at my daughter. We need to run inside and grab some money and go find the ice cream truck. We'll get some for Isla and Zadie and Mom, too. Zadie is probably not even one at this point, and Sheila will explain to me later that she does not really need anything from the ice cream truck quite yet. I notice the look on Kaylee's face has changed a bit. There's a tiny seed of doubt that has crept in. The suspicion that I, her very own father, am screwing with her, which is probably my own fault. It is pretty easy and funny to mess with your kids when they are little. And it's fair because they will get even with you when they are teenagers. More than even with you. But yes, Virginia, there really is an ice cream truck. We run inside, I find my wallet, and we are off running, listening for the music in search of our ice cream. I have no recollection whether or not we found the ice cream truck that day. Those of you that know me know that I have a hard time holding it together on almost any topic, especially involving my kids. I vaguely recall Kaylee asking if there were trucks cruising around Portsmouth selling other things she might be interested in, too. But that may just have come with an inevitable degree of story embellishment over so many years. I'm not sure at this point. What I do recall vividly, as if it were just yesterday, is the sheer joy in my daughter's face as she learned about ice cream trucks. Innately curious about the world and so genuinely excited to be learning about it and understanding that there are such amazing gifts to be found in it. Sadly, conventional schooling, and I'm an educator, and sometimes even common expectations about growing up will essentially beat this curious passion out of us if we're not careful, if we do not resist, if we are not steadfast and deliberate in cultivating it. I also worry that as we grow up, we might sometimes start to think that all our ice cream truck-like discoveries have been made, which is, of course, utterly ridiculous. I guess the question for all of us is, when was the last time we were overwhelmed with a sense of wonder, of passionate curiosity, and of joy of learning something new? Was it recent enough? Does it happen often enough? In November of 1993, I stumbled across some writings in a small used bookstore while traveling. Good travelers tend to be disciplined about being open-minded, curious, attentive, thinkers, taking their time, connecting with others, keeping things simple, and being flexible about their plans, which is, of course, precisely how we should live when we are not traveling, but we often forget. That the bookstore was in Pokhara in the Himalaya Mountains of Nepal, and that we read by candlelight because the whole town only had electricity for a couple hours each day seems so painfully cliche that I should not even mention it, but it is unfortunately true. The simple proposition that I bumped into there in Pokhara was that there are two, and just two, pure essential motivations: love and curiosity. Nothing more, nothing less. Neither is complete without the other, and nothing else is necessary. I played with this idea for a bit more than 20 years, and I love it, but I eventually reached a place where I felt it was incomplete. And this is probably two or three sermons in and of itself. Love, how can love be incomplete? I understand what it means to love my daughters, and I know what that looks like. I understand what it means to love my wife, and I know what that looks like. I understand what it means to love my sister, my parents, my family, my closest friends. But I've never quite figured out what that means in the broader world in terms of how it looks each day. It's simple to talk about it, and it's simple to feel it and to think about it. Love thy neighbor as thyself. I am not sending Mark and Ellen's kids to college with my money. I go 3, 4, 5 days sometimes without seeing them. And I struggled with this, that love must be more than just a sense or a feeling within me. There needs to be something actionable about it in the broader world. And I'm not sure exactly what that meant for me. Curiosity, yes, integral to us as a species, to us as human beings, the passion, the story I just shared. But truly foundational, root, core, I wasn't sure about that. Curiosity can also be just plainly annoying. And it seems to me that pure motivations are probably healthy and good in whatever dose. But I love both ideas, and I love playing with both ideas. 2 years ago, here in Portsmouth, 2017-ish, I deliberately carved out some time to learn, to think, reflect, and to write. And I don't mean an afternoon or a weekend, I mean several months. Having realized years ago that I have no interest in retiring as I love my work, I'll slow down but I won't stop, I've done a pretty good job of building little mini retirements into my life, integrating them into my life as I go. Sort of like gap years for adults. My daughter Isla is graduating from high school in a couple of weeks and has deferred her college admission to the fall of 2020 so she can work, earn some money, explore, and do some cool things. We've both grown to detest the term gap year, though. A gap in what? She's just living her life, as are all of us. There are no gaps. School is real, work is real, everything is real. The drive for this self-imposed sabbatical of sorts a couple years ago was not just love and curiosity, but I had grown particularly fascinated with the world of science as I was paying attention to it, and our further developments into the nature of the origins of the universe. I was particularly fascinated with the study and exploration of gravity, because we don't know what it is and we're still figuring it out, and consciousness. 20, 30 years ago, consciousness was considered the end of your career as a scientist if you were to delve into it. And now we are pushing into those boundaries philosophically, scientifically, spiritually. Gravity in particular has absorbed me. Are there any physicists here? Good. 3 centuries ago, you're going to remember this from high school, Isaac Newton, 3 centuries ago, Every mass attracts every other mass in the universe, and the gravitational force between two bodies is proportional to the product of their masses and inversely proportional to the square of the distance between them. And he labeled gravity a force. He took the Latin word gravitas for weight to describe this concept. Quarks, by the way, came from scientists. The scientists that discovered quarks took the word from a James Joyce novel, Finnegan's Wake. But gravity, the word, is a word. Go back to high school. Do you remember this in high school, barely? A little bit? This is an ice cream truck kind of thing that we took notes on, got tested on, and moved on. Isaac Newton was wrong. Albert Einstein would come along 2 centuries later, a century ago, and he would describe a different theory that worked better, that gravity is the warping of space-time. And space and time are not different continuums, but the same. Something I still can't quite get my head around. But what I have come to understand, not just as a layperson, but that we as a species, we have no clue what gravity is. Einstein does not. Newton did not. It's as if we described where planets and things were, and we made up a magical force and some equations that would describe their behaviors. But it's a thing we have not seen. We don't know if it's a phenomena, a force, or a particle. Scientists are studying this now, and there's speculation we may never know. It is flat out magic. It is flat out God, if you want to think of it that way. And here we are in high school writing down formulas. And this is ice, like, what? Gravity is so finely tuned. And I know we always speculated without gravity, we'd all fly into the air and the earth and everything would end. Well, there would be nothing without gravity. There'd be no universe. It is finely tuned to the point that if it were any stronger, everything would collapse into itself and we would not be here. And if it were any weaker, nothing would exist. Planets, solar systems, ourselves, the electrons, protons, neutrons that surround us. And here I am in my 50s. In my 50s, I made it that far without getting how incredible this is, how wondrous this is, how little we know about it. Gravity was just part of this for me. But what I came to understand, you know, as I dove in to this, what I came to understand, with a lot of folks that have gone this far, and I know there's some of you who are here, that origins, the Big Bang, 13.8 billion years ago, but why the Big Bang, what came before that, was there beginning to time, we're clueless. Gravity, the very fabric of existence, the quarks, the electrons, are they particles? Are they energy? Are they waves? We don't know. And no matter how far down we go, we're not really going to understand what that elementary thing is or where it came from. And consciousness, how our brain makes sense of all this, how we feel, how we turn signals into a picture and images and senses, we don't understand it. We're beginning to pick up where different parts of the brain play in, but we have no clue how a collection of quarks and electrons, no different than the pew, the church, the squirrels, the cement in the road, have gained consciousness and can process these things. So at the end of this sabbatical of sorts to review, let me say this again. We know what we know is extraordinary and is growing every day. Extraordinary. But among the small little things that we, as in none of us, have a handle on are where the universe came from and why, the very fabric of the world we live in, gravity, quarks, light, so forth, and the mechanism by which we perceive it all, our consciousness, pure mystery. For many, we simply make the leap to faith at that point. This is God, this is soul, this is the magic, this is the mystery. Fair enough. And to all this, you add that in the expanse of time and space, the trivialness of any particular moment, of any particular person, of our species, or arguably even the very existence of this universe in the expanse of time and space, or how little we have control over. We can do our best, but how things work out, we don't know. and we cannot really even venture to guess whether a farmer losing a horse is a good thing or a bad thing. For me, I am overwhelmed with humility. Not a thoughtless, uneducated humility, although I do not judge a thoughtless, uneducated humility, but a deep humility that can only come from working hard and thinking hard about ourselves and our world. A humility that is the product of curiosity and being at peace with the mystery of all of this and cherishing it. And giving the present moment the very best of ourselves just simply as a matter of choice. Yes, it's all trivial, but the present moment and today and us and here is all we have. Why not give it your very best? And bonus, not only did I find that humility was the thing I was looking for in curiosity, it also became clear to me, without really trying, that humility was the answer to my question about love. What love looks like in the broader world for me, beyond my family and my friends and those closest to me, is humility. Thank you.